We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 123. Scott, you are back from your brief hiatus. You were in Taiwan. You were eating those creepy crawlers. I guess it did not kill you. My one and really my only question is, how was the bowel movement after that meal?
I tell you what, man, the bowel movement was completely screwed up the entire trip, because when you go from eating just on your regular, I work from home, so I have a very like normal schedule with my food and a normal bowel movement schedule if we're going there. But when you go over to a foreign country and you're eating Chinese food every single day for every meal, it stops things pretty bad. It doesn't go anywhere. And
Yeah. I have Chinese food once and I'm out of whack for like 7 or 8 days. So I can only imagine 8 straight days of it.
Yeah, it was tough. I'm not a big fan of being off that schedule. That's one schedule I do like to keep, like, you know, without a doubt. But
You traveled to the other side of the world, so obviously it was a 16 hour time difference?
It's 12 hours. It was 13 hours, and then daylight savings happened, so it was okay. 12. Yeah.
So that threw an extra wrench into it for you.
Yeah, yeah. I was how does it change for an hour? It was very confusing.
When I went to Australia, it was a 16-hour time difference, and the food is obviously much more normal in Australia than it is in Taiwan, but even just your body clock being that screwed up messes with everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like, being on a plane for that long, like, I'm not trying to do anything on the plane. I don't know. I'm just trying to get there and then get back when I'm on the plane. I'm trying to, like, make that time pass as fast as possible. But, yeah, I got to a point where I was like, I was there for 8 days, I think. But I got to a point where I was like, yes, I found a burger place. And I go in there and I'm looking at this. And the burgers, I'm like, come on. Like, what, can't we have something normal here? And it was like, there's a fried egg on everything. There was an egg on the burger. And then they got these little chicken nuggets, or what I thought were chicken nuggets, on the side as like the fries.
Was this a McDonald's that you found?
No, it was called something else. There was a McDonald's that I found eventually, but this place, I forget what it was called. But they were not chicken nuggets. They were oysters. And I didn't know that until I ate one. And it was horrible.
Fried oysters?
Yeah, but it was not like in a good way. It was not in a good way. They were very mushy and disgusting.
What was that thing that you posted that was crawling around your plate?
It was called abalone.
Abalone. Yeah, but like,
it's a shellfish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big shellfish.
They were dying. You posted, PETA would take your Twitter profile down. You posted animal cruelty all over the internet.
Oh, yeah. They were not screaming. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping they would scream, but they did not. But
you sick son of a bitch.
It was pretty ridiculous when they put that down. It was like Indiana Jones. It was definitely something out of an Indiana Jones movie. But once they stopped moving, I was the first person at the table to go for it. They're pretty good.
It's never how you want a sentence to start when you're talking about getting food at a restaurant. You know, once it stopped moving,
yeah,
it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was surreal. That was strange, to say the least, when they dropped that off. So, but apparently it's a delicacy. It's one of those things down there. Yeah.
Good trip. Otherwise, though, you had fun. I saw you were sending some videos. What looked like an Asian Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I was out there for a trade show, and we were meeting with a bunch of people that we do business with out there. And a lot of when you go out there, like all the younger, quote younger, I'm part of the younger crew. We went out to the club, and dude, we were out at some Taiwanese club till, I don't know, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. It was pretty ridiculous on Saturday night. So, yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And yes, they do. The clubs were, they had like a whole bunch of girls walking around in like a train with like a siren and a police light. And they were just stopping all, you know, with shots. And it was weird. It was fun, though.
Well, it's good to have you back. And I'm glad you made it back in one piece. We are only a few days away from our spring training trip. So you get back from Taiwan. Are you ready to go to Tampa?
I am. I'm going all over the place. I'm going to Tampa. I'm actually coming up to your neck of the woods, Boston, in another week and a half. So I'm ready to go. I looked at the weather, and it looks like it's going to be in the low 80s. Got some nice, beautiful, sunny skies in the forecast.
Absolutely. Now you just jinxed it, but whatever. we're going to be at the Friday game, the 1 p.m. game versus the Phillies, and then we are going to Southern Brewing and Winemaking for our meetup at 6 p.m. So if you're going to be in the area, please come out and come to that event, have some beers with us, and talk some Yankees baseball. Then we're going to the Saturday game at 1 p.m. as well versus the Blue Jays, and Scott and I's plan is to hang out in the right field bar area, probably nursing our hangover. So both of those games should be pretty fun. It was the only weekend that we saw that had two consecutive home games at home on the weekends. So this is the weekend we went with.
Yeah, and you figure that you're going to see a lot of regular guys getting a good amount of action. There's only, a handful of games left. So
it's their last hurrah before last push for the season.
That's it. So we should see some pretty normal baseball, actually, on both sides. Both teams should probably play most of their regulars.
The 25% off code for this week is Didi. It's kind of a sad note. Obviously, we're going to get into all the Didi stuff coming up on the podcast, but use code Didi for 25% off in the fan shop. And final bit of housekeeping, please rate and review the podcast in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, wherever it is that you listen to this podcast. Shoot us a 5-star review and give us shoot us a 5-star rating and give us a review. It is much appreciated. Really helps us out in the ratings. All right. So Scott, before we get into the Didi news, because I know that is going to be the hottest topic. We got a bunch of mailbags on that topic. Let's just fire off some quick hitters. First of all, the Yankees are 18-6 in spring training. Now, most people are just disregarding that because who gives a crap? It's spring training. But that is obviously a great record. It's the best record they've had since 2009. You might also remember they won the World Series in 2009. Not making the connection, but I'm also not making the connection. There's a lot of games. Usually you don't play this many spring training games, but because it's a World Baseball Classic year, there are more games on the schedule because spring training started earlier. So, I mean, obviously winning games in spring is better than losing games in spring, but do you think people are appropriately reacting to it, or are people, or should we be reading into this record a little bit more?
I think when you have a very good spring training record, there's a number of things happening. Obviously your guys are playing well, right? I mean, that goes into winning, but a lot of times that goes into winning early on in the game. Spring training, as we all know, are almost a tale of two, maybe three games within one game because you're seeing so many different levels of players come in. And the fact that what I see the most out of that record is the depth of the New York Yankees right now. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we're saying this is the first year in a very long time, if ever, that we're looking forward to watching an entire spring game all the time because every single inning, there's going to be guys that we want to watch play because Double A, Triple A is so stacked. So to me, that's one of the biggest takeaways. Now, on the other side, if we're going to overreact to things, I mean, all the guys that we need to do well have done well. You know, there have been a lot of good, promising things coming out of spring
offensively
training.
Offensively.
Yeah, well, and I think pitching as well. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is the depth.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think offensively the team, I don't know if what the stats say, but they've got to be near the top in runs scored in the Grapefruit League. So offensively, top to bottom, obviously, if you look at the stats, most of the players are hitting, and a lot of the young kids are hitting. Frazier is hitting. Torres is hitting. Judge is limiting his strikeouts. So up and down, it's really been positive things out of the lineup. And that has been the main issue for the Yankees since probably 2012, is a lack of offense and a lack of young offense, because the veterans tended to tire and look really old come July, August, and September. So these young kids don't get tired as quickly. So that's all positive that we're seeing.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you think about what happened at the beginning of last year and the just massive holes that were in the middle of the lineup with A-Rod and Teixeira, and now we're adding guys that are younger. Well, not in Matt Holliday's case. I guess he's up there close to that age. But we're adding the younger guys with Bird and Sanchez now for a full year. There's going to be a lot more pop. I think the offense people are always saying, oh, I don't know if the Yankees are going to score enough runs. I actually think the Yankees are going to be just fine on offense. I think the way that their offense is structured as well, like the types of players that they have in that lineup, it's going to be very it's going to be a very good thing. I don't think they're going to really suffer in that way. The pitching is this year is definitely the biggest question mark. And it was last year, but it actually held up okay.
Yeah, we've been saying pitching is a question mark, but they've kind of held it together with smoke and mirrors. This might be the season where it all comes crashing down. Tanaka's been unbelievable in the spring. He has not allowed an earned run. Pineda's been really, really good as well, and he's pitching for a contract. So you know that, or at least that history shows us that that plays out well for players who are pitching for contracts. CC struggled, but he's guaranteed a rotation spot just because they have giant question marks throughout the rest of the rotation. Of the five guys who were competing, Severino, he's got a 5 ERA. He's allowed 12 hits in 10 and 2/3 innings. He's had two good starts.
Yeah, and they were early. They were early, too. So the buzz came up. Yeah, the buzz came up about Severino and, oh, Pedro Martinez fixed him. And now all of a sudden he forgot how to pitch again.
And even after the first couple of starts, when he had good starts and then he had bad starts, at least Girardi and all the coaches were saying, well, he was throwing the ball well. He was using his changeup in big spots. That shows confidence. But now it seems like he's just regressed since the second week of March or second week of spring training, whenever that was.
Yeah, the one thing I'll be careful about judging all the pitchers, and I guess we can look at the whole body of work, but again, still, I'm hesitant to judge them on how they're doing. And a lot of that is because I think, especially early in spring training, a lot of these guys are working on certain things, and even in a start, maybe even a little further down the road, if the pitching staff or if the coaching staff hasn't seen something from a guy, you know, maybe he'll have to throw that, like in Severino's case, maybe he'll throw that change up 25% more often in a start in spring, or you know, there's just certain things that they work on, and it wouldn't be their normal repertoire, so that's why I'm more hesitant for looking at the pitching stats.
That's probably. I think you could use that excuse more for a guy like CeCe than a guy like Severino or Sessa, Warren, Green, Mitchell, who are all competing. They need to compete their ass off to make the starting rotation.
They are, but at the same time, the coaching staff is going to want to see them throw certain things as well.
Sure.
I don't know. There's
the last outing for Severino afterwards, coaches and Severino blamed fastball command.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
That's a real big problem.
That's a problem.
I mean, if it was like, oh, I hung a couple sliders or a couple changeups, you're like, okay, fine. Who cares? That can be disregarded and fixed easily. But if he doesn't have his fastball command, he's shit out of luck.
I really don't understand how major league pitchers don't have fastball command. It just, that's one of those things that baffles me.
It's like when NBA players can't hit free throws.
Yeah, it's a fastball. Just throw it where you want to throw it. You're a freaking major league pitcher. Throw it where you want to throw it.
Well, they're afraid.
Yeah, it's... Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're just.
You don't want the opposing player to hit it to the moon.
Sometimes they don't have the feel on that given day. The feel wasn't there. That was Evaldi's. That was when I started getting sick of Evaldi, when he started blaming the feel.
You know, I hadn't thought about Nathan Evaldi in quite a long time, just until
you
brought his
name
up.
Well, there you go. You're welcome. Thanks a lot. No problem.
Luis Sessa has a 7 ERA. Warren's pitched well, at least stats wise. He's got a 3 ERA. Same for Chad Green and Brian Mitchell, which have pretty good ERAs as well. I almost feel stupid talking about ERAs because it's in such low innings pitched.
Right.
But we thought, and a lot of people thought, Severino had a clear-cut favorite line to one of those rotation spots, and it really does not look like that at this point.
I still think he's the favorite only because he is who he is as far as they seem to have this project around him, or the prospects of him being still a top flight starter, and I think for that reason and that reason alone, the potential that he's going to start in the rotation no matter what. I think I pretty much think he's the number four guy no matter what, and then they're going to add one of these other guys, and it's probably going to be Mitchell. But
I agree with you, but say they don't, do they send him down to the minors to continue being a starter, or they put him in the bullpen? Severino, I'm talking about.
I would throw him back in the minors. Again, they've talked about it. They've made it very well known that they do not want to give up on him as a starting pitcher, and I don't know when you have to draw the line. You know, this guy is not going to be a starting pitcher
after this year.
Yeah, but it's not going to be in spring training this year, right?
No.
So that's why I think they would continue to keep him stretched out, and they would send him down. But you know,
if
I don't see it happening, and they're not going to need a fifth starter right until I don't know, a few weeks into the season.
Why? We got our quote-unquote ace needs an extra day off. They need five starters.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, your boy.
If Severino does not – if he doesn't make the starting rotation and he goes back down to the minors and he pitches and he starts in the minors, then gets a call up later in the season and still is not successful as a starting pitcher, I think then they'll have to finally give up on him being a starting pitcher.
The problem with Severino and going down and looking at what he's doing in AAA is he dominates AAA every time he goes down there.
But
I think the very last time he went down, he had probably the roughest time that he had spent in AAA. But I don't know. I'm really just hoping he's not a, you know, we talk about these 4A players. Like it's looking more and more like Ref Snyder's a 4A player. I'm really hoping Severino's not a 4A pitcher.
Well, see, he does not have all the familiar symptoms of a 4A pitcher. 4A pitchers don't throw 95 miles an hour.
Right.
And he's got movement on his fastball. And what we saw in 2015 was major league top of the rotation. That was not 4A stuff. And he's proven he's got good enough stuff to be in the bullpen as a major league dominant relief pitcher. Let's put it this way. He certainly has more talent than a 4A pitcher.
I just don't understand how it goes away like that with a young guy young guys should not be in their heads. They should be a bunch of cocky dudes who go out there, have all the confidence in their ability because they're a young early 20s pro athlete. Like, go out there and just throw.
Especially,
for whatever reason, he's in his head too much.
Especially considering all the success he had right off the bat in 2015. I could understand if he came up and got his brains beaten in to like his first five starts, but that didn't happen. It was the complete opposite, actually.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere. It's something that doesn't make any sense.
Warren has looked good, and so is Mitchell. So I don't think they're guaranteeing Severino a spot because I think had all of them been pitching crappy, then maybe I'd say yes. But Warren, Green, and Mitchell have all looked much better than Sessa and Severino. So the Luis boys are really falling behind.
Yeah, Sessa is he disappointed me. I thought he was going to show a lot better in the spring. So he's 100% going to be starting in AAA. Warren, I feel like they know what they're getting with Warren. So, you know, I have a feeling Girardi's mind was made up about him unless there was just a disaster in the back and they had to put him in there. I felt like he was going to be the long guy. I don't know. That's just my theory on Warren. I feel like Girardi loves him in the bullpen and he loves having that guy that he knows he can go to at any point, and that's Adam Warren.
But they have so many guys in the bullpen who can give you what Warren gives you out of the bullpen.
Yeah, but Girardi loves his guys, and Warren's that guy.
He trusts Warren.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't you think he wants to have at least some stability in the number five rotation spot so you're not trotting out two horrid starting pitchers back-to-back in number four and number five? I mean, you throw Severino out there, and he gets his brains bashed in, and then you follow that up with Chad Green. You could have another 2 2/3 start the next night, and then your bullpen is completely trashed.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going with the history and the way Girardi likes to use his bullpen, because you know we love his bullpen management. That's one of the key attributes of Joe Girardi that I think both you and I love about the man. He's a terrific bullpen manager.
Do you know a funny thing about that? I was reading something on Baseball Prospectus, and they rate managers' use of bullpens, and they give them a score. And did you know Girardi scored the highest last year out of any manager in baseball for his bullpen use? It's basically when you use pitchers to get the most out of that specific situation. He ranked the highest. I mean, he had
luxury. Three people in
the back
of the
luxury
pen.
Of having.
He had a 7, 8, 9 guy that were all studs.
Right. Not everyone had a three-headed monster, and then a diet version of the three-headed monster in the second half. So I think that needs to have an asterisk on it. But still, I would have thought he would at least be near the middle of the pack.
Does it say anywhere in there about ruining Dellin Betances? Is that in there?
No.
In there?
That's why I laugh. That's why I laugh, because there's so many things. I think you more than anyone have laughed at the advanced metrics, because you I think are more on the eye test than even I am. I like the eye test as well, but I do throw in plenty of advanced metrics. But there's some things that metrics just can't capture, and that is overusing Dellin Betances and having him warm up every seventh inning, regardless of the score, for four straight months. And that ruins a guy. And we know that because we watched every single baseball game.
Yeah, and that's why we were going to add to the advanced metrics and give them a stat for exactly that, so that it could be included in the ratings of a manager and the bullpen use.
What was it? What did you call it again?
It was
B-warm-ups or B-whips.
B-whips, yeah. B-whips.
We need to have someone, we need to have a scout out there in the bleachers, out in the right field bleachers at Yankee Stadium, counting the number of pitches that Betances is throwing each warm-up.
Yeah, the B-whips.
I wonder if they even track that. They have to, right?
I bet the bullpen catcher gives a number to somebody at some point.
Yeah.
It's thrown in the mix somewhere. And if it's not, they should. Why wouldn't you? I don't get that. It's still pitchers thrown, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how I always it's certainly not the amount of stress thrown. That's why it was always funny that they would count intentional walks as four pitches when the guy was lobbing it 70 miles an hour versus trying to throw 95 mile an hour darts on the black. Like, the stress on your arm is slightly different, I would think, for those two situations.
Yeah, I don't have that problem anymore.
Speaking of stress on arm, James Kaprielian finally got some game action. They let the bull out of his cage like a week after it was pretty much set that we might not see Kaprielian in any game action this spring. He finally gets in. He struck his first batter out, got a double play in that first inning. He's looked really solid. I know he's had two outings. Fun to see him in game action. What changed? Why all of a sudden did they decide to let the bull out of his cage?
I don't know. Everything they were talking about was going to be, we wouldn't see Kaprielian in a competitive game, but possibly a simulated game just to get his work in, and they're going to be extra careful with this dude. And then all of a sudden he's out there pitching against real guys. So, I mean, that's a positive thing. You know, they felt good enough even after those comments to say, hey, this guy is ready. He's healthy. He looks good. Let's see what he can do. So I think this is all positive stuff for Kaprielian, and it could, as long as this guy stays healthy, that's a name to watch for us for sure in the first half of the season, how he's doing, because he could be a very fast riser.
Yeah, starting pitcher in the second half of the season potentially.
Absolutely.
Assuming, which is it's a good assumption that they're not going to have five starters that are consistent for the whole season.
Oh, come on. We all know that 4 and 5 guy is going to be like 30 different dudes.
Yep. The Yankees might set a record for number of guys to start a game for this season.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of – it's going to be a – they're going to have to do the Scranton shuttle for the starting pitchers.
Before we get into the DD talk and mailbags, because I know it's going to be a lot of DD talk, we're going to have to console each other and prep for the worst, I think, on DD. Yeah. But I'm officially putting a moratorium on the will the Yankees sign Bryce Harper and will they sign Manny Machado talk. I'm completely sick of it. I mean, I know it's a slow time during spring training, but how many times can the same freaking story be written about Bryce Harper? He's not a free agent after this year. He's a free agent after next season. So can we at least put it on the back burner until summer 2018? Do we have to really be talking about this shit now?
Can you imagine what it's going to be like then?
Oh my God, it's going to be like LeBron watch free agency. Is Harper going to have a decision? I bet Harper has a decision. That just popped in my head. And God damn it, Bryce Harper is going to sit down on ESPN and have a freaking decision.
No doubt. There's no doubt about it.
Manny Machado, it's going to make me puke.
And Manny Machado will just send a little message somewhere, and it'll be done. Yeah, I'm sick of it too. So do we have to continue to talk about this, or is this it?
Right, no, I'm putting a moratorium. So anyone who emails or tweets us, we will not talk about it after this episode, which is episode 123. No more talk until summer 2018.
Okay, but first we need to talk about Machado and the WBC because – that was ridiculous. I don't I know you haven't been watching it as much. The games have been late. I started watching it when I got back from Taiwan because I missed most of the games while I was over there. And it's been a lot of fun to watch them. These are fun games to watch. The energy in this I think there were 43,000 about that at in San Diego at Petco for this last game versus the Dominican Republic, and it was electric, man. It was a fun game. The shot that Machado hit, the catch that Adam Jones made, ridiculous. The tip of the cap, like the whole thing was just a really cool play. And overall, I've been very impressed with the WBC and the one, the level of play, and two, the amount, these guys are into it big time, and you could tell that the crowds are too. It's been fun.
Yeah. Do you know what my problem is with the WBC? Is that it takes a lot to get people invested in something that really does not matter. There's no, these games don't count. So how do you get people invested? Oh, let's throw it on Saturday night at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Are
that's
you kidding
a problem.
Me?
Yeah. Well, I know they have a unique situation where there's large fan bases in Japan and all over the world. So they have the timing is going to be a big problem.
It was
for them,
the U.S.
no matter
what. Versus Dominican. That's Eastern. That's an Eastern crowd. The Dominican is in the Eastern time zone. And you're putting that on 10 p.m. on a Saturday night is lunacy.
It was a terrible decision. It was a terrible decision for that one.
You made that 7 or 8 p.m.
I think it was a bad decision to have that bracket on the West Coast in the first place. Why aren't they playing in Miami? Like, I don't know if they're going to have all these guys on this side
of the
world.
Or Texas or something. Like,
fine, yeah. It was a bad decision. And I was fighting to keep my eyes open on that game.
I mean, I'm sure most people were. They were probably in a March Madness coma by that point.
And it was St. Patrick's Day. It was like people are hammered and trying to stay awake. I started drinking just to watch the game at like 11:30. It was nuts.
I have no doubt. I mean, I saw the clip of Giancarlo Stanton's home run, and it was an absolute blast. It almost went through that building in left field.
Yeah.
Stanton's a beast, and I
it was
I
a love, laser.
Stanton's one of my favorite players. But come on, you got to do better, baseball or World Baseball Classic, whoever's in charge of this thing. You've got to make this more accessible to fans, because I'm not going to go seek out a game that does not impact standings. I'm just not going to do it. I can only care. I have only so much care in my heart. I can only have so much passion towards this stuff. I saw the clips on Twitter and it was a lot of fun, but I didn't go put it on my TV.
Oh, I did. What they're trying to do, though, is if you look at soccer, soccer's got the World Cup that does not impact any of the standings for, I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about with soccer, but I know that there's leagues and all this crap that people are all about their teams, right? But then when the World Cup comes, and then it's different because you're all about your country and all like that. That's what they're trying to put in. And I honestly think that it's got that potential, because baseball is that worldly of a game that you can do this. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, like into the game with the USA, you know, chasing the Dominican and the game before that. It was a lot of fun, and I felt like those were my guys for that minute. Even though there were like barely any Yankees on the team, those were my guys. It was USA. It was all about the laundry at that point, and it was fun. I think it's got potential. I really do. They got to figure something out though with the timing of it, when they're doing it, because to me there's just you're gonna see this. With having such a high level of competition this early in the spring, you're going to see injuries every single year.
Yeah, well, first of all, injuries, we're obviously going to get to that in a second, but the best player in the world is not playing in this thing, Mike Trout. And that's right. That's a problem. Why isn't he playing in it? Well, the Angels and him are probably terrified he's going to get injured.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Didi Gregorius now has an injury, and he came back from Team Netherlands. I'm going to read his injury, and I needed a freaking textbook to read this thing. Didi has a hematoma of the subcapsular muscle. A hematoma is a solid swelling of clotted blood within the tissues. It's basically a fancy word for bruise. I don't know why they have to use the word hematoma. And the subcapsular muscle is a large triangular muscle which fills the subcapsular fossa and inserts into the lesser turbicle of the humerus and the front of the capsule of the shoulder joint.
Did you just throw up? Did you just throw up on your microphone?
For all of those people who aren't biologists or don't study human anatomy, Didi has a shoulder injury.
Yeah, the whole hematoma thing, I mean, the solid swelling of a clot of blood, I mean, isn't that what happens when you bruise? Isn't that it's like a deep bone bruise? I don't know. It could be something
worse than a bruise, but not as serious as like what? A gunshot wound? Like, what is the level of this thing?
But exactly. I think one of the things that's scary when you think of that about this and you hear the word clot, you know, that's where you start hearing scary things. I start thinking of David Cohen.
I got real nervous when I heard that.
Yeah, I started thinking of David Cohen and some of these guys that had blood clots, and that's serious business when you're talking about that. So obviously we're hoping for the best, and it's not something as you know, freak as that, where if it's an injury, like a bruise, and he just like banged it, like hopefully that's it. And it just needs some time to heal.
But I don't how could you get a bruise that is bad enough to take you out of the world? Like if he gets hit by a pitch, like that's not going to cause a bruise bad enough. And he's not playing the field. So it's not like he dove and landed on it. Did he fall down a flight of stairs? Did someone hit him with a bat? Like, did Xander Bogaerts, like, punch him because he's trying to sabotage the Yankee season?
Possibly, yeah. But the one, I saw comments from Joe Girardi, and they were talking about the doctors looking at his arm saying he's got good strength in the arm, but they wanted to do it just to be cautious. And I could see that. Like, he had a bruise. Let's not push it. You're done. That was fun. Congratulations. You guys did really well. You're done. You're coming home.
He was
and
mashing,
we're going to make sure. Yeah. So I'm really just hoping this was just a very, they're just playing it very safe. And he felt something. And because he felt something, they pulled him out of it. I'm really hoping that was it. And he's just going to miss a week.
But the fact that he got injured, and there's these big words being thrown around that you have to Google to find out what they mean. I mean, it's going to throw Yankees Twitter into a panic. And it did.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully it's just a bunch of big words that mean absolutely nothing, and it's a big scare, and he is just fine, because that would throw a tremendous wrench into this season that we really don't need. You know, we want – everything's going nice and smooth. The plan is kind of being executed to the way that everybody thought it was going to be, and I think having your shortstop, who has been on the uptick big time, have a significant injury would really throw a big wrench into this.
I mean, he's certainly one of their three or four most important position players, wouldn't you say? Oh,
absolutely.
And I mean, behind Gary Sanchez, behind probably Greg Bird, just from an offensive standpoint, I might put Castro, I might put Didi third most important position player.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think him and... No, I agree with that. He's extremely important, and I know we have a lot of mailbags coming in, and we have talk about this, about who could possibly replace him. But, he is a major league ready player who made significant improvements last year, and this is a guy who has been taking his game to another level. It seems like, you know, as the years go on, he had a good second half of the year in 2015, a good year last year. We're ready for him to take another step. So it's not. Everybody gets, I think, their eyes glazed over with all these prospects, and they forget about what we have currently on the major league roster. And that's a very good shortstop who is taking large steps forward.
Yeah, and I also got sort of panic flashbacks to Mark Teixeira injuring his wrist in the 2013 World Baseball Classic. And, I mean, you can argue that derailed his career.
He's made of glass, though. That's a different story. It's, you know...
Well, I understand, but it's still an injury.
That was a violent sneeze.
It was still an injury that happened while he was not playing in a Yankees uniform.
Yeah, I get it. I know that.
It's frustrating.
It's frustrating when that happens. You know, it's frustrating when you see a guy playing pickup basketball, you know, bust his knee open, or, you know, those things happen. Obviously, this is something that's, because it's baseball as well and you're not playing with the Yankees, I think it adds another element to it. But... You know, who's to even know that he did it in game? I mean, who knows how this injury actually happened? Or even
you mean the Didi injury? We're gonna have to find out.
Yeah,
if it's something that was not game action, I mean, then you just blame Didi.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something random too. If it is a blood clot, something like that. I mean, I don't really know how those pop in. I thought they were just random. It's like a random act of your body, but. Again, this is all speculation on what the hell is wrong with him.
Yeah, he's having an MRI and more tests on Tuesday. So maybe as people are listening to this, there'll be more news on Didi.
Yeah, and hopefully it's good. Because everybody's forgetting about, too, like, this guy is taking another... He seems like one of the leaders on the team. He's a good guy. I don't know. There's a lot to root for with Didi Gregorius. So you really want... I really want to, you know, him to be okay, because I was excited to watch him for another year.
And then it also sucks that, I mean, he was super excited about playing for Team Netherlands. I mean, he was DHing, even though I'm sure he would have loved to be on the field playing the infield. But he was one of their offensive stars so far. They're in the semifinals. They're going for a World Baseball Classic championship. It's probably killing him to not be there. So it's just kind of like shitty news all around for Didi.
Yeah, it does suck.
All right, let's move into mailbags. We got a couple on Didi. The first one comes from Julio, and he says, with Didi hurt, do you think the Yankees are going to highly recommend their players not to participate in future tournaments like the WBC?
Yes. I think I think the Yankees moving forward with these types of things. I mean, obviously we have, what are they, every 4 years, 3 years,
yeah, four.
Every 4 years, you know, we'll see what happens in 4 years. But yes, I would wager that the Yankees brass is going to ask all the prospects that we see now that hopefully in 4 years are major superstars will not be playing for their teams unless they make significant changes, and they do it, I don't know, in the middle of the season or after. I don't know when they'll do it.
Like,
or
when would you? Yeah, when could you do it? When
it's such a long season that it's difficult to even fit it in.
You'd have to take time off at the All-Star. You'd have to have like a 3 week All-Star break and play it in July.
I could see that. But then you're going to run into the problem with the season running late and freaking freezing.
Well, no,
games.
What you'd have to do is you'd have to do what the NHL does with the Olympics, and you'd have to cut games off the schedule every 4 years. Oh. If MLB is actually committed to making the World Baseball Classic a thing, then they would do that.
Every baseball purist in the world just went crazy. There'll be an asterisk next to every record made in those seasons.
Well, no, I mean, I guess for records that require you to play in fewer games.
Yeah, it would be. I don't think that'll ever happen. That I don't think will ever happen.
It's tough though to tell players that you can't go play for your country.
Like, why don't they just make it like the Olympics used to be and just have amateur players? So you have a bunch of guys who are minor leaguers
Who the hell is going to watch that?
Because then you're rooting for just the country. You're rooting for your country. I would still watch
Scott,
it. I would still watch it.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
I
would absolutely.
I'm calling bullshit. You would not have watched on Saturday night U.S. versus Dominican if you did not know one person on those rosters.
I would. I would watch it.
That is horseshit.
No, it's not. I like baseball. I like when the countries go out there.
I'm not watching that though.
You don't watch this. You don't watch it when there's superstars in it. So you're definitely not watching it. But when there are guys going out and playing for the country, it takes on a different level. It's like the Olympics. I don't know any of those people until I start watching the Olympics and get behind them. These are no names until they are names. It would be fun. It would be separate than the major leagues at that point too.
All right, next question is from Robin Lett, and he says, apologies in advance for how poorly Andrew reads this message. Hey guys, if Didi is projected to miss a chunk of the first half of the season, will the Yankees roll the dice on Torres? I know Castro has big league experience at short, but seems to me the true... I know Castro has big league experience at short, but seems to me the truly great players, Harper, etc., are able to cope when thrown in at the deep end at a young age. I read that well. Robin's punctuation and grammar there kind of threw me off. But
sure.
Listen, everyone wants to see. As soon as Didi news came out today, everyone was like, Gleyber Torres is going to be the opening day shortstop. It's a negative a billion percent chance of that happening because he's only played high A ball and they're not going to throw him into the fire like that. I think he could handle it. I think he would go through some growing pains. I think he would really struggle to start, but is that worth it for, say, Didi is out until June 1st. I'm just making up a date. We have no clue. Didi's out till June 1st. Is throwing Torres into the fire for 2 months and risking him having a setback? I mean, the guy is on an unbelievable trajectory. Is that really worth it if you're the Yankees?
No, it's not worth it, and it's not something they would do. I mean, they're not the Yankees have never been and never will be a knee-jerk reaction team. This is not something that they're gonna do because the injury happened. You know, I could see something if this is a long-term injury, and Torres is in the minor league starting at Double A. I mean, he will most likely, if he starts doing well, he's gonna fly through the minor leagues. If that's the case, I could see that happening.
Yes.
I don't see them ever doing anything like this because they're gonna make sure that he can get through each level and then pop up. But no, the Yankees do not do this. This is not what they do, and nor do I think they should. Because while I do think that the kid can handle it, and I think that he very possibly could be ready right now. He may go into the major leagues right now and do well. Like you said, he would have some growing pains, but I think he would be able to handle himself well. I think he's that good. But it's just not the way that it's done in baseball. It's not the way that the Yankees do it, and they are bringing this kid along slower to make sure that there aren't those setbacks.
He
looks not slow. It's not slow either, right?
Nah, he's 20.
He's going to be coming up pretty fast. Yeah,
He will be in the major leagues by the time he's 21 years old.
Yes.
That's aggressively fast for a player.
Right.
You only see phenoms play when they're that young in the majors. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. Like, those are the guys who are in the major leagues at age 20. Not, right. I mean, think of where Aaron Judge is. Think of where Clint Frazier is. Clint Frazier is the Yankees' number two prospect. He's 23 years old. Right? Yeah, is he so 22 or 23?
He's ish. You know, he's in that okay. range. But so, I mean, that's at least two years.
2 years yeah. behind Gleyber.
Yep. And Torres will 100% be starting somewhere in 2 years, somewhere on the diamond.
Yeah.
So.
And as far as, like, other guys who I think we could see, Torres is the easy answer if it's a very short stint. Like, mm-hmm. oh, we need a shortstop for 2 or 3 weeks. Let's just plug Ronald Torres in, because then we don't have to really jumble our roster around. We don't have to move anyone around the diamond, and that's an easy fix. If it is like a 2 month thing, then I would hope, and I kind of could see them giving Tyler Wade a shot.
Yeah, or God forbid the Brendan Ryan of today, like a Pete Cosma or someone like that. I could absolutely see them doing something like that too.
I actually think that's Ronald Torres though.
But the problem, well, Torres can play everywhere. That's the problem with putting Torres in there as the short term everyday shortstop, is then you're losing your super utility guy. And maybe that's Tyler Wade.
You're really giving him a lot of credit with that super utility role.
Well, whatever. You know what I mean. He plugs him in at different places in the infield. That's a guy who could play second, third, and short. There aren't many of those guys that we have. Tyler Wade is absolutely becoming every single day more and more and more valuable, and the kid is having a hell of a spring. And he is proving that he could play practically everywhere. I mean, he was at center field. He's been at shortstop. He could play second, third. I mean, this dude's everywhere. And he's hitting, too, which is not something that everybody was expecting him to do. He's been hitting in spring training. So I think that's the sleeper right there is Tyler Wade.
Yeah, we actually got a question from Eric at emichael888 on Twitter. He basically said everything you just said about Tyler Wade and then asks, could Wade steal the bench spot from Torres, because Girardi mentioned Wade being the type of guy that can play multiple positions and gives him the opportunity to have an extra pitcher, which of course we know Girardi would love to do.
Right. I think Torres is on this team no matter what. I mean, because Girardi proved last year that he likes using him in different spots. I think because of Headley and the horrible start he had last year, I think Torres then is even more valuable, because they know that he could go in there, get some good at-bats, play a good third base. I don't know. I just think he's too valuable as that utility infield guy to be set at a position for, you know, an extended period of time.
But it sounds like if they have like Wade and Torres on the roster, that is two guys who are quote unquote super utility players. So why couldn't they just do a combination to fill the gap while Didi's out?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad thing to move, to have your guys be versatile and can play multiple positions.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, this is something I've been screaming for a long time. Like, let's move these guys around. Let's see what they can do. They're ball players. They can play different positions. Absolutely. It just really depends on how long Didi's out. If this is an extended thing, then it will be different than if it's just patchwork for, you know, a few weeks.
Castro also threw his hat in the ring for being able to cover some shortstop duties if needed. But
very nice of him.
I mean, Castro, first of all, was a kind of bordering on below average defensive shortstop by the time he was moved from the Cubs. And Didi obviously is a very good shortstop. And also, do you really want to then weaken two positions? The Yankees would be weakening two positions in that sense.
Yeah, and I feel like Castro he's a little bigger, a little heavier in the saddle, if you will. These days, since he's
got into that Bronx Italian food, and then
his workout videos were a little bit different than everybody else's workout videos this summer or this winter. It was mostly just him hanging out doing fun things. But I don't know, he's not as nimble as he was 3-4 years ago when he was playing shortstop.
A-Rod's still out there.
A-Rod's still out there. What, playing third? Talk about a hefty saddle. I mean, that's exactly where he needs to go, too.
A-Rod could bring his shortstop roots back.
Oh, if the ball's hit at him, yes, he would field it.
Okay, let's move on. The next mailbag question is from Brandon, and he says, I know spring training stats don't mean much. However, watching Jordan Montgomery, he looks like Severino in 2015. Joe said he's intrigued by him, and what do you guys think of him as a fifth starter?
So they've already made a comment saying that Montgomery is not in the competition for the fifth starter. This is a guy that...
Well, have they?
Yeah, they have. Girardi said that, I believe.
When?
It was this past week. I saw...
Okay, well, I just read something today. Like New York Post or something that added Montgomery to the list of five. So it was six players with Montgomery in there. A long shot, but...
Yeah, what I heard was that... It's not a consideration. Anyway, what they are going to see him start. He was talking about getting him to. I mean, he hasn't even started a game yet in spring training. This is not a guy they've even looked at as a starter yet. So what they're going to, I think they are going to give him a start this week. That was what they were saying. I heard Girardi talking about that. This was he was talking about this with John and Susan one of the last game they broadcast. That's where I heard this. Anyway, he's going to get a start at some point, and they're going to see him. What I think he's going to do is he's going to be stretched out. They'll use him in AAA. If they need to use him as a starter, then he'll be probably one of the first guys to be called up. I don't see them putting him in the bullpen at this point. But Girardi was talking about that, saying that there have been guys who start out in the bullpen in their careers and then move back to a starting position, the following year. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, but they do like him, that's for sure.
We have to also remember that so many of these pitchers who are having solid springs who are like, oh, maybe they'll just be thrown into the bullpen. Well, it's unlikely because whoever doesn't make the starting rotation is probably being thrown into the bullpen.
Yeah, the whole pitching statistics in spring training is very difficult to get behind and to really make much sense of. I mean, you see guys who just are blitzing through spring training and then go into the season, and who was it? Barbado last year won the best pitcher in spring training, right? He came into the Yankees and was terrible and got sent down within like 2 to 3 weeks. You just never know.
There's so many of those guys that are just all jumbled in my mind. I can't even distinguish them at this point.
I know. Let's not get overly hyped. Montgomery has good statistics in the minor leagues. This is a guy that they're high on. Before he started doing well in spring training, he was not in the conversation for that fourth or fifth starter. And I don't think it's a serious guy. I don't think he's in that conversation right now. But they are intrigued with what he's doing. That's where I think it is.
He's a lefty.
That's something.
that's a thing.
He looks like, I made this comment a few weeks ago on Twitter, was that if you look at him and the way in his delivery and all that, he does look like he's got like a Boone Logan build, and his delivery is actually not far off from what Boone Logan looks like.
Does he throw as hard?
I'm not sure how hard he throws, to tell you the truth. I want to say mid 90s, but I don't think he's a top. I don't think he's an upper 90s guy.
Yeah, everyone throws mid 90s now.
Yeah,
talk to you when you can crack 99.
There's some kid. Who is this kid talking that he can hit 107?
I didn't see that.
I saw it somewhere. He's a prospect somewhere. I forget where it is. 107 is what this kid's trying to hit. I got to remember what it was now.
Okay,
I'll get back to you on that one.
Next mailbag question, and it's a bit of a different one, comes from Noah Adler at NoahAdler99 on Twitter. This is my favorite sports time of year, considering the Yankees are doing well in spring training and the Flames are in a playoff race in the NHL. My question is, what is the best time of year for sports for you guys?
So, I love this time of the year. I mean, the baseball season's about to start. You have March Madness in full swing. I think this is a great time of the year. It's kind of like, shedding off winter, getting rid of your coats. You're starting to get into some warmer weather. This is one of my ideal ones. And then probably my favorite, though, is when the Yankees are playing, is when it's the baseball postseason and you have football. To me, that's like the best.
Yeah, like September 15th through the end of October.
Yeah.
Because you get all of the baseball playoff races coming down into it. And now with the wild card being added, that adds like an extra wrinkle to the baseball playoffs. You almost get like a bonus 2 weeks of playoffs because so many teams are involved. And it's like a complex math equation trying to figure out which teams are still alive. I remember you and I tried to figure that out last year at one point. You and I are not the two best people to be figuring out all those different playoff possibilities and tiebreaker scenarios. No. And then, yeah, football getting going. When everyone still has a shot.
It's the best time of the year as a Jets fan.
Still have a shot.
Best time of the year.
Yeah, and there's nothing for me. Like, I could just watch baseball playoffs. The Yankees were not in it this year. I watched every single MLB playoff game this past October because it was that good.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's good. I mean, it's amazing when your team is in it, obviously. But I think baseball playoffs are the best in any sport. I think it's the intensity is just super high and it's a lot of fun. So
yeah, they're quick, and every like you finish a game and then you're like, oh, back at it tomorrow night. I got a stomach ache already for the idea of whoever we're facing tomorrow night in the pitching matchup.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Now I'm getting a little sad though because it's been a while.
Might be this year. Might be coming sooner than later.
Oh baby.
Yeah, 2015 did not get the get our fix in.
No, that was because we knew what was going to happen before that game even happened. It was such a disappointment waiting to happen. We knew the offense was going to do nothing. I can't even talk about it. I'm getting upset. George is getting upset.
That's a long time ago in a team that I don't even recognize anymore.
Yeah.
All right, next mailbag question is from Stephen Kelly, and he says, what is the ETA for guys like Torres and Frazier? When do you think we'll see them in the Bronx? So kind of already touched on some of this stuff, but you can argue both Torres and Frazier have the stats that deserve to make the team.
No doubt.
Especially Torres. I mean, he's lighting up the scoreboard. I think he had another double and two RBIs on Monday. Hitting over 400. He's hitting 444, probably like 450, 460 at this point. Two homers, five doubles. Frazier's hitting 343. Cut his hair to comply with the Yankees rules.
What a team guy. I mean, I think even after the haircut, he's been on fire. The dude's been playing well. He's, I'm happy that he's having a good spring. I think he's kind of going under the radar with what he's doing on the field, because it seems like all you can talk about or you see everywhere is just the hair, the hair, the hair, the hair. Who gives a shit about the hair? Let's talk about what this guy is doing on the field, because if we're talking about guys to come up, and that's what Steven was asking about, Frazier's the first guy to come up, most likely, because he's already in AAA. He's been in AAA for, you know, an extended period of time now. He's basically playing himself into the major leagues. If you see a guy like Brett Gardner struggle, I could absolutely see Frazier coming up sooner than later.
Well, yeah, the first time that Gardner or Ellsbury misses it like a week or 15-day DL, Frazier's getting the call-up.
Yeah.
Assuming he doesn't have a terrible, terrible performance at AAA to start the season.
I'm not 100% down with that, because I'll tell you why. I think if Ellsbury goes down, I don't think they bring up Frazier, because I could see them bringing up a guy who's got more of the defensive center fielder prowess. Like,
why?
A,
they would just plug Gardner in center field and then put Frazier in left field.
I don't think Frazier's the first guy to come up in that sense. I think like a Mason Williams would be ahead of him.
I think if Frazier is hitting, it's going to be hard for Cashman to justify not bringing him up.
Yeah. Cashman has talked about this. He's going to determine when he comes up by his play in AAA. That's what's going to happen. But he's going to have to light it up.
He can. I mean, at this point, Frazier has to be able to taste the major leagues. I mean, he's so close.
Yeah.
So it would be extremely disappointing and disheartening if he goes out and sucks to start the season in AAA. You'd be like, okay, what the hell are you doing?
The thing about him, why I don't think they would bring him up in a scenario like that, depending on if it was a short term, because I don't think they want to send him back down. You know what I mean? So I could see that's why I could see them bringing up like a Mason Williams or even a. What's his name? Fowler, bringing him up and just playing like a solid defensive center fielder,
like what they did with Ben Gamble.
Ben Gamble, exactly. Frazier's one of their top prospects, top two prospects. He's not the guy that you want to come up and go back and go up and go back.
But if it's not an injury, and it's not terrible, I mean, for them to bench Gardner or Ellsbury, they would have to be so putrid.
Yes.
Like, unlike anything we've seen.
No, I agree. I think that's where he would come up.
Unless Judge is really stinking it up, they'll have no problem benching him. Yeah. And, like, Aaron Hicks is not going to get a regular playing time. It's just not going to happen at this point. So, barring injury, we can't just count on someone having either Ellsbury or Gardner being shitty and then Frazier getting called up in July. Like, when is it going to happen if not for an injury? How is it going to happen?
It's going to – well, I see. I think the further the season goes along, the less the guy has to suck, if that's making any sense. So as we're going in – like, so let's say we're just past the All-Star break and Gardner hits a big slump. I could see them at that point, if Frazier's hot and we're past the All-Star break, then you could get benched. Then it becomes an easier benching because you're getting to the end of the season. Frazier's the guy that's going to be coming up for the next year. I could see it happening at that point.
That would be pretty unprecedented for the Yankees to do.
They've been doing things that are unprecedented for the past year and a half now. You know, they're doing things that are different that they've never done before. So I'm not putting anything past them at this point. They know what the deal is. Everybody knows what the deal is.
I also saw a comparison made of what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant. You remember in 2015, he was lighting up spring training. He hit over 400, and he was the number one prospect in baseball. And then the Cubs delayed his start time in the majors. I think it was 3 weeks, and everyone was kind of bashing him because they're like, well, you're going to sacrifice performance at the major league level to just to delay someone's free agency a year. You and I talked about this on the podcast, right? This was all happening during our podcast, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I remember having the conversation.
Yeah. I don't think it's a situation. I don't think we're seeing that with Frazier. I don't think that it's quite an apples to apples comparison.
No, it's not. I mean, Chris, I don't think, I think the Cubs were in a very different place too at that point. And when he was
they
coming up, like he was the guy that they were waiting for a long time. And I don't know. I think it was a different situation. I think did they do the same thing with Trout? There was a guy before Chris Bryant who it happened to that made big news too.
I mean, if it happened with Trout, it didn't matter because the Angels gave him a new contract like a year later.
But there was another, like a major guy that this had happened to before Chris Bryant. I can't think of who it was off the top of my head. It may have been Trout. But anyway, no, I don't think that's the case with this. I think the Yankees are ready to go. If this guy's playing well, then he's going to come up. I mean, that's it. I think the scenario that I gave is probably the most likely. It's after the All-Star break. I mean, look what happened last year with Brian McCann. Well, Brian McCann and Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez played himself under the team, and McCann stopped catching. Just stopped catching.
You could just slide him into DH. They're not going to slide Gardner or Ellsbury into DH. You got to slide him into a bench role.
I mean, I get that, but the thing is like the writing's on the wall. Like, you guys do not have a future on this team. The future of this team is behind you. They know it. It's basically what everybody's talking about, training guys for their own jobs. So that's what's happening right now.
So Jacoby Ellsbury is going to be hiding all the batting equipment, and Brett Gardner is going to be putting shaving cream in their lockers, kind of hazing them because they don't want to have their spots taken.
Yeah, he's going to make their life miserable. Yeah.
I mean, if you're Brett Gardner, though, at least you can hang your head on the fact that I'm tradable. I mean, if you're Jacoby Ellsbury, what are you saying to yourself? How do you sleep at night if you're Jacoby Ellsbury?
He just needs to start playing like Jacoby Ellsbury from years ago, start taking steroids again or something.
Do you know how I just figured out how Ellsbury sleeps at night? On a bed made of $153 million.
Yeah, he's sleeping on cash pillows. You know, he's fine. He is fine. He does not care.
Next mailbag question is from Parker Gibbons. Do you guys feel that Kyle Higashikoa, I'm going to call him Higgy, Kyle Higgy, should make the big league team out of camp? He's looking pretty good this spring. His numbers quickly, 318 batting average, 682 slugging percentage, 2 homers, 7 hits.
Yeah, this is a guy who, we're going up and down this lineup, and we're saying this about a lot of people, but a lot of people deserve to be looked at because of what they're doing in spring training. And he's another one of them. I mean, he's shown well, I think, defensively. He's shown well at the plate, but he just doesn't have a spot on this roster. Austin Romine is 100% going to be the backup catcher. You know Girardi wants his backup catcher to be a veteran-type guy, a defensive-minded type guy. Romine's been in the system forever, it seems like. And I don't even think it's a question mark. I think Higgy's going to start in AAA. Hopefully he hits, because I could absolutely see them dishing him away. He's one of those guys to put on your list as a trade prospect, because he will be one.
Yeah, every time he gets a hit in spring training and every time he gets a hit in Scranton this year, that's another check in Cashman's box to be able to trade him.
Absolutely.
And good for Higgy, because if
he's not playing here.
If you're Higgy right now, you're like, shit, I got Gary Sanchez in front of me.
Yeah.
It's like how all infielder, all shortstops coming through the Yankee system. We're like, well, what am I doing? I got Derek Jeter in front of me. Like, they're not moving this guy. So
he is not blind to that situation. I guarantee he's like, I am playing for a spot somewhere else. I am playing to make my trade prospects better so that another team wants me as their starting catcher, as the future of their you know, their starting catcher. That's what he's playing for. He's not going to be a New York Yankee for a long time.
And I mean, some of these guys have to be traded because there's just too many of them.
Too many good players. I don't know what to do.
Next question is from Kyle.
We're
going to
trade away all the ones that actually work out. Yeah, you know that's happening.
Of course. Next question is from Kyle Roberts, and he says, I know that some people believe that Hicks is going to be the next Mookie Betts.
I thought it was Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah, he spelt Mookie Betts wrong because, I would love it if Aaron Hicks could become Jackie Bradley Jr., but Mookie Betts is an MVP caliber player, so
yeah.
Hell yeah. He goes on to say, but do you think it's possible that Billy McKinney squeezes into a backup outfielder this year? And that's actually, you were just mentioning if they'd call up a guy as a stopgap if someone's injured. You didn't mention McKinney, but he's got to be on that list.
Yeah, definitely. But I also think that he's also one of those guys that McKinney is a right fielder, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's been playing right field. I'm sure he could play in different
corner.
Positions.
Yeah, I'm sure he can play left field, too.
But I tell you what, by seeing what he's doing, by seeing what Frazier's doing, by seeing what Dustin Fowler is doing, like, there are guys that are loaded. They're ready to go in this outfield. Aaron Judge better be on his P's and Q's and ready to play because there are people behind him that are looking very good. And McKinney is a top prospect guy. He was on the 100 prospect list. We were talking about him when we were talking about these prospects because he was off last year. Due to an injury, the guy has been hurt for basically a year. He's healthy, and we're seeing now why he was such a top prospect. He was with the Oakland A's system,
He came over to the Cubs in the Samardzija deal.
Right, exactly. So this is a guy that's been highly touted. He was a top prospect, and we're seeing what that is. He's a big, strong kid. He's been mashing the ball. He's got a beautiful swing. I really like him. He was one of the guys that I said is a sleeper. Like, when he got added to that list, because Mason Williams got hurt, that was a huge opportunity for McKinney, and he has not looked back. I mean, he looks really good.
Who do you think projects to be the worst team in the majors this year? Would you say like San Diego or maybe Oakland?
Yeah, sure.
Do you think Scranton could beat them in a 7-game series?
Yes. I'm telling you, man, Scranton's going to be loaded.
Scranton's going to be stacked.
Yeah, they're going to be so good.
Especially while Frazier's there.
They're going to be the best AAA team
and
that's ever been
assembled. If Torres gets called up to AAA and you put Frazier there on that team.
What are season tickets for Scranton going for right
Dude,
now?
Dude, we that's should take a road trip to Scranton.
Yeah, man. That's going to be must-see. I mean, the people in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, in that area are in for a treat. I mean, they had a treat last year. They won the championship. They had a lot of these guys coming through. If you live in the area where there's a minor league team for the New York Yankees, chances are you're going to see some very good players and some very good baseball. So,
I might go to my home state of Rhode Island and see the Paw Sox play the Rail Riders this year. It's
there you go.
Not a bad idea. Okay, final. Actually, we have two more questions. Oh, a lot of questions. Love it. This one is from Jonathan Baker, 1996 on Instagram, and he says, if you could have any player come out of retirement and play again, who would you like to see and why? And I'm going to add a couple of stipulations to this question. It has to be someone that you saw play, and it has to be someone that you'd want added to the 2017 Yankees.
Okay. Why don't you go first? Let me think about this one for a second.
So if I'm like, if it's for one season, I mean, that changes things. But if I'm like adding this player and they're going to start as a rookie, I would say it's got to be someone like Andy Pettit or like Roger Clemens. Like a dominant starting pitcher, an ace that you can count on in the playoffs. That's what this team right now is lacking.
That it's so funny that you say that because Tanaka is, you know, that guy that is not your ace, but he's a guy. Yeah, I actually would tend to agree with that. I think that they do need that another top flight guy. When you look at teams that succeed in the playoffs, they have more than one guy that they can go to in a short series. So I think a Roger Clemens type is the guy that I'd be looking at. You know, that's a guy that can come in there, dominate. You know he's going to come back. He can throw on short rest because you need that in the playoffs. That's probably the number one guy.
And if it's just for like a season that I want to watch for one season, like give me Ken Griffey Jr. in his prime.
Ooh. You don't want Jeter again? We have too many shortstops.
Listen, I've seen, this is going to sound really douchey, but I saw Jeter so much at his best. I'd like to see Ken Griffey Jr. and root for him day in and day out. Like his 1996 season, like put that in center field at Yankee Stadium. He might hit 90 home runs at the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun to watch that dude play in Yankee Stadium. Trying to think of someone else I would like.
Like you saw players from the 80s. Like, come on.
I was 9 years old.
I was 9 years old. I was 8 years old in 1996 when Ken Griffey Jr. was lighting it up.
You know, one of the guys that I always wished I would that I was older to, I think that I would appreciate more was, and this is going to sound cheesy because I did see him play, but I think right now in my where I am today, I would like to see Don Mattingly play because I don't think I truly appreciated what. You know, all of the things that he did when I was a kid. I mean, I was in awe of what he did, but now I can look at the players and just, I don't know, I appreciate it in a different way. So I'd like to see Mattingly play while I'm an older baseball fan, and I think I would take a different appreciation away from it.
You might see that this year from Greg Bird.
Maybe. I would love that. He's definitely high on the list, man. He's going to be a good player. He's got that it. He's got that it factor, that's for sure.
All right. Let's do the final mailbag question. It's from Tommy Caruso. Let's assume Jorge Mateo converts to center field. What's your ideal outfield with Rutherford, Frazier, Judge, Mateo, Fowler, McKinney, Cave, Williams? Assuming all can play to their potential at the major league level, do you put Judge at DH and give someone else a shot? Essentially carrying five or more outfielders. So just also a bit of news today. I saw that it was reported that Mateo finally expects to get in-game action in center field.
Yeah, he's going to be playing a lot of center field in single A. That's a look. Mateo's got to get his shit together.
His new position is center field.
He has to me dropped off the face. Like, God, I wish they traded him 2 years ago because his value just continues to go down.
Well, the thing
with
is,
everybody around them, it's just he needs to. I hope they keep him in single A for an extended period of time so that he has the ability to put up some numbers so that he can kind of regain that status again, because I don't want them pushing him to double A when he's not ready, because it doesn't look like he can handle it. It doesn't look like he can handle the adversity with, you know, moving up. And from what we saw in spring training, he did not look good.
I mean, we were just talking about how Torres is so advanced. They're both the same age. And just look at the difference between the two.
It's night and day.
Like,
it's absolutely not.
Torres is unquestionably on track for the major leagues. He's going to plow through double A and triple A. It's just a formality at this point. Jorge Mateo can barely get out of single A.
He's a different type of player, too. I mean, he's a very different type of player.
Yes, but they were both highly rated shortstop prospects. You mentioned also, like, oh, I wish they traded Mateo a couple years ago. Well, they couldn't at that time because, yeah, hindsight's 20/20, but we didn't know we were going to have Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, no doubt. and he was one of those guys that was untradeable. If you remember, they balked at the Kimbrel deal because Mateo was involved and they didn't want to give Mateo up to San Diego. So
you know what? I still I'm on board with what Cashman decided on that.
I agree with it because at the time he was the heir apparent. He was the next guy coming up. And you don't trade that type of highly touted shortstop prospect for a guy like Kimbrel, who we've been talking about.
Unless you're Theo Epstein.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about how these relief pitchers are coming out of the woodwork and being effective. I mean, and that's one area that the Yankees have done well in as far as their advanced scouting and making sure that they've got guys coming up. They've done well with relief pitchers. So I was totally fine with that. But now I'm looking at him. I just want him to regain that status so that they can move him, because I do believe that he's one of those chips that they're just hoping he does better so that they can move on from him. Because I mean, him, you package a Mateo with a starting caliber catcher. Now you're talking some, you know, a decent package. You add some more elements to that. The Yankees have, are putting together another arsenal where they could go out and grab somebody that could really help the team.
Like, you went away for a week, and I became optimistic somehow. Because what I'm about to say might surprise you, but Blake Rutherford, I think, next spring could be what Gleyber Torres is this spring.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't seen him Do we know what he's been doing in the minor league spring training? I haven't even looked. I need to check that out.
I'm just going based on what Baseball Prospectus and Baseball America wrote about him and what all of the scouts said about him. Is that
they all love him. Yeah, they all love him.
He has like all the tools as a player, and he's like, yes, he's a center fielder now, and a lot of center fielders like, yeah, he's probably going to move over to one of the corner outfield positions. Not with Rutherford. They're like, yep, he's a center fielder.
Yeah. And he's a guy who's been, if you're looking, you know, after we talked to him and even before we talked to him, I was, you know, with us just kind of doing a research on the kid. It's, you could tell that in the offseason, his work ethic is there. And that's one of those things you're seeing with Torres, the work ethic. I mean, that was the biggest thing that stood out with Gleyber Torres from the very beginning. Like, yes, we know he's a good ball player. Yes, we know that this guy is highly touted and all this stuff. But the first thing that I noticed was the way that he carried himself, the work ethic that he had. And it seems like Rutherford is kind of cut from the same cloth, you know, comes from a good family, comes from an area where he's got a lot of support, and the dude just seems hungry to be there, and physically he's got everything you need. So I wouldn't put it past him.
I just Googled Blake Rutherford spring training 2017 stats, and I can't even find anything. I don't even know if they keep that stuff. I mean, I'm sure they do, but that's going to be on the deep webs.
The deep webs, the far corners.
Yeah. If someone can find those, please tweet us those.
It's on the opposite side of the alt-right deep corner. It's on the other corner.
It's right next to all the fappening pictures. All right. Follow the show on Twitter at Yankees Podcast. We surpassed 800 followers on Twitter. I'm setting a goal for by opening day. We want to get to 1,000 followers on Twitter. That's 100 a week. I think we can do it. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew_Rotondi. Follow Scott at Scott Reinen. Submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast and call the voicemail line at 646-480-0342. The next time, potentially the next time you hear Scott and I talking, we're going to be in the same room in Tampa. I'm pretty excited about it. Scott, it was good to have you back. I'm glad you made it back alive. Do you have any last words this week?
Yeah, something we completely forgot to mention is they might hear our voice before that because we're trying to work out a scheduling issue. But we have Ben Heller, who's going to be coming on the show and joining us. Either it was supposed to be tomorrow night, and I just got a text because we all realized that there's a Yankee game tomorrow night. So
yeah, oops.
Whoops.
Someone who's playing for the team and then two podcasters and bloggers who follow the team religiously forgot there was a game.
Right. So who does night games in the spring? I don't know. But apparently the Yankees do tomorrow night. So we will we'll reschedule for that, and he's coming up soon. So I'm excited for that. He seems like a fun guy and very well could be a big part of the bullpen this year.
Definitely. So yeah, maybe you'll hear that before we're down there in spring. But if not, you'll definitely hear it hopefully soon. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.